BFFT. From the PAC West Center in downtown Portland, presented by High Caliber Millwrights, here's John Canzano with the bald-faced truth.
Well, what have we been doing for, like, the last 6 months or so? We've been talking about college football. And obviously, here comes the NFL. Thursday night football, start of the season. I was talking to a friend right before I went on air here. John Strong, the voice of American soccer. Just chatting up, talking about the college season. And I said, hey, here comes the NFL. Thanks for keeping my seat warm. How will you balance that? How will you balance your fondness for college football with the start of the NFL season? These things, while we think of football as one and the same, these things don't tend to cross over real well. College football steers clear of the NFL. Won't play games on Sunday unless they know there's no hint. They kind of treat the NFL like they treat high school football and the sacred Friday nights. They just go, no, it's not for us. We're not going to go there. Can we do a little mixing here, Stephen? Leave the bump music up as best you can while we transition to the NFL season.
The Cowboys face the extreme polar conditions with a mixture of fear and loathing. No one was prepared for this kind of weather. Even some of the Packers had trouble starting their cars and getting to the game.
Now, they aren't living in the state of Oregon in early September. 100 degrees today.
Whew. The autumn wind is a pirate, blustering in from sea. With a rollicking song, he sweeps along, swaggering boisterously.
I don't know. I'm ready for the NFL. Do I need the autumn wind being a pirate in the background? Stephen Vaughn, we've got NFL football tonight. We have the Ravens. We have the Chiefs. I have to know where your heart lies and where your bet lies on the game tonight before we get into any of the college football stuff, because the NFL is about to take over and tell college football, thank you very much. The stage is ours now. Congrats to USC for having a great week one. Congrats to Idaho for playing Oregon close. But now the NFL is about to take over. Where is your heart and where is your bet tonight on Thursday Night Football?
Yeah, my heart and my bet is with the Baltimore Ravens plus 3 points. I like the Chiefs. I was against them last year, and then they ended up winning the Super Bowl, so it made me look wrong. So maybe I'm wrong again, which is fine. But that's how the NFL works. We just don't know. But, yeah, it's great. It's great to have football back. And you're right. Like, we get the college football season in as kind of like the appetizer, and then you get the NFL just shoved right in your face. And then they're going to be playing on every day except for, what, Wednesday this year? Like, it's going to be shoved down our throat that way. And I couldn't be any more happy that we're going to have football basically every day of the week. You know, from now till, the end of the Super Bowl with college and the NFL.
I'm pretty easygoing when it comes to, like, picking a place to eat. And I'm not one of these people where, you know, somebody suggests, you know, hey, you want to go here? I go, no, I just had that 2 days ago. I'm not that person. I will generally eat anywhere that, you know, the person next to me wants to eat. But one thing I don't like is I don't like those places, those tapas places that give you like the mini plates that are overpriced with like, you know, just some bites on the plate. And you're supposed to share it with everybody. I like a good delineation between your food and mine. I like a proper portion. And so that's where I draw. But what I feel like the NFL does here is that college football comes out and college football goes, hey, we're going to give you, you know, we're going to give you some chips and guac, maybe some tableside guac. And that's the USC LSU game. And we're going to give you, you know, some surprises in week one. And then all of a sudden the server comes back to the table and puts like a 64-ounce T-bone right in front of you and goes, hey, NFL's here. Pam, plops it on the plate. That said, there are some great college games this week. We'll talk all about them. Oregon is facing, I think, a moment of truth. And I say that a little bit like with a smirk because I think Oregon's going to be fine. I'm just really curious to see how Oregon plays against Boise State. And Oregon State, I think, faces a real opportunity going to San Diego State in a game that the Beavers, they need to win if they're going to stay relevant. They're going to stay visible. San Diego State is very thin. It is a change in regime there, just like a change in regime at Oregon State. Oregon State should have better players. Oregon State should have the better running backs. Oregon State should have more depth. The game being at San Diego State, you know, Snapdragon Stadium makes me a little nervous for the Beavers. But other than that, I think Oregon State's going to win that game and has a, you know, real good chance to come out 2-0 against a 2-0 Oregon team heading to the Civil War next week, which would be fantastic as standing room only tickets are going fast at Reser Stadium. So I think a lot to look forward to. Washington State's hosting Texas Tech. Washington is hosting Eastern Michigan. You know, we should have all the teams of the Pacific Northwest meeting in their week three rivalry games, undefeated, unblemished, and ready to get down and show us what rivalries are about in week three. That's going to be weird, but we're going to have it happen. Across college football, we have great games, with Colorado, Nebraska being one of them. We're going to dive into our picks and our leans on today's show. Leans being, you know, like we won't officially lock in some of these games, but we'll talk about them. Or we may lock them in if we feel good about them. I have a pick that I made at johnconzano.com that I feel great about. And maybe that's the kiss of death when you are predicting games. I have been crowing now for days about my performance in week one, 12-3 against the spread, feeling really good about my 80% win percentage. People are telling me, don't jinx it, don't jinx it. I'm not. I even called and reached out to a Harvard professor who's an expert on superstition, and I reached out to a University of Pennsylvania, you know, professor who's an expert on superstition. I peppered both of those guys about superstitions and sports, and, you know, I was kind of doing it tongue-in-cheek, but one of them gave me a study that is done in the 1940s, and for people who are way in the weeds on superstitions, I'm about to blow it up for you here, because this is what happens when you reach out to people smarter than you, and I don't like being the smartest person in the room, so I did that. I reached out to these two professors, and I said, hey, help me out with superstitions, because in sports, we see them all the time. We see people who say, oh, I'm wearing my lucky shirt, or we see a fan who has a stuffed animal that they sit next to the TV and they rub for luck before every game, or you have a fan who will wear a rally cap, or players in the dugout will wear a rally cap, or in baseball, players won't step on the foul line, or they have rituals that they go through. So this University of Pennsylvania and Harvard professor both told me, kind of rolled their eyes at sports superstitions. It's not what they're used to talking about. But one of them pointed me to a paper that social philosopher B.F. Skinner wrote in the 1940s. Skinner put a pigeon in a box, and the box would dispense food to the pigeon at regular intervals. Oh, stay with me here. Don't roll your eyes. It's still a sports radio show. Stay with me. So this hungry pigeon's in a box, and the food would get dispensed at regular intervals. Now, pigeon can't tell time. So the pigeon's sitting there, much like conditioning we saw with Pavlov's dog, right? The pigeon is thinking that every time it gets fed, whatever it happened to be doing at that time, whatever idiosyncrasy it had at that moment right before the food was delivered, the pigeon is naturally conditioned to think I bobbed my head, therefore if I bob my head when I'm hungry, I'm going to get fed, or I flapped my wings, or I turned in a circle and all of a sudden food came out. It's just conditioning, right? Except the pigeon believed that whatever it was doing when it was first fed, the very first time, might somehow be triggering the food. So the Skinner says that the pigeon developed what amounts to a superstition and kept doing it. Now, this is different than just conditioning, because the pigeon might spin in a circle, nothing happens for, you know, a half hour before the next interval of the feeding happens. Then all of a sudden, here comes the food. And what does the pigeon go? The pigeon goes, oh, yeah, that happened because I kept spinning in a circle. It's not unlike sports fans. It's not unlike the hitter who won't step on the foul line. You just keep repeating the behavior, and over time, you eventually get fed, and it reinforces your superstition. And so Skinner was onto this in the 1940s. Now, do you sit in the same spot on your sofa? Do you wear a rally cap? Do you have a lucky item of clothing? Do you believe on some level that what you do affects the performance of your team? I have a reader at johnconzano.com who wrote me this morning who said, hey, every time I turn off the Ducks game and they're losing, they come back and win. And he said, I've been doing it now. Whenever they fall behind, I just turn it off, and I look at the score later, and lo and behold, they have come back to win. Now, it could possibly be that the Ducks are good, and they come back from a deficit and win games that they trail. It also could be that, you know, this fan is just coincidentally reinforcing his behavior and he's forgotten the times where they didn't win. I don't know. But superstition, it's real. Some believe in it. I am now feeling foolish for all the superstitious things that I have ever done because these two professors kind of rolled their eyes at me and they were like, this is not what we're in it for. Steven, are you a superstitious sports fan? Do you have these things or were you a superstitious player when you were playing college basketball?
As a fan, no, not really superstitious at all. Like I know that I have no impact on the game at all that way. When I was a player, I mean, I did like little things, you know, like I would put my right shoe on before my left shoe just because I felt more comfortable. I'd always start. My first shot I'd always take was a left-handed layup because I was so right-hand dominant that I wanted to get like one left-handed practice shot in. But like those are the only two things really that I was really superstitious.
It sounds
about.
Like you're a little bit superstitious.
But numbers didn't matter. Like, you know, pregame celebrations didn't matter. Like, I didn't really care. I just, you know, I kind of did my thing. And
Do you notice it in the NBA in particular? Because you were working for the Blazers, you were around a lot of NBA players. Like, you will see guys, Tim Duncan, when he was playing, he would go through the same warm up progression. Had to do the same thing. LeBron has his little thing at the scorer's table with the powder, you know. Like, you've seen stuff like this.
Yeah, it's they are creatures of habit, definitely. Like, a lot of these professional athletes are, and it's not even just, like, pregame, like, at the arena. It's they need to take a nap at the same time every single day, or they need to, you know, have a snack, the same snack at the same time every single day. Like, that's kind of what they have to do to get their mind and their body ready. Like it is, I think those professional athletes are very superstitious with what they do. But I think a lot of that has to do with the science that they have behind it now. They also know your body needs this amount of sleep or your body needs this many calories before you play and stuff like that. Where I think when I was playing, you know, it was more just like, oh, I think this is kind of funny or this is kind of cool.
I tend to play better when I get 8 hours of sleep versus staying out all night. I am a very superstitious person.
That's science right there, yeah. John. That's,
you know, there's ways to twist this. But I thought it was interesting, the pigeon in the box. Pigeon thinks, you know, if I do this and I keep doing it, good things are going to happen. And lo and behold, they do. And so it's a reinforced behavior. So it's very interesting, I think, to consider that when you talk about your idiosyncrasies as a sports fan. I mentioned that the NFL will get going. College football is going to be overlapping to a certain extent. You do see college football games on Thursdays and sometimes on Saturday nights for sure. And you know, you may eventually see college football try to creep into Sunday. And I want to steer the discussion there a little bit. Dennis Miller, the president of the CW, came on this show and talked about that and said, you know, Sunday games might be something that the CW would look at. You know, for Oregon State and Washington State fans, I grow more and more confident that Oregon State and Washington State have a plan. I just don't think they walk away from the Mountain West Conference scheduling partnership unless they know in their bones that they've got something else to lean on. It feels to me like they want to play Power Four conference teams. They're certainly missing playing the UCLA, the USC, the Washington, Oregon State crossover, Utah. They're missing those teams this season, you know, not all the way through because Oregon State does play Oregon. Oregon State does play Cal. Oregon State does play Purdue. So it's enough. And they play Washington State. So that's enough for Oregon State. But I kind of think like I'm more and more confident that the plan for 25 next college football season is going to involve the CW network and Dennis Miller, the president there. And it's going to involve the ACC, I think. And I think Oregon State and Washington State are going to, you know, I don't know if it's going to be a full-blown scheduling partnership, but think about the logic of it. You have 17 teams in the ACC. They only play an 8-game conference schedule, so they have an extra game to schedule. And I just wonder if the CW approaches the ACC and goes, look, it's been great to have these games on the CW. We now have two more West Coast schools that we like. We would like to work them in a little bit. How about six of you play Oregon State and six of you play Washington State? And could we have this be a scheduling crossover? And, oh, by the way, whether you're the home team or the road team, you're both getting paid to take this game. We're going to pay the ACC partner. We're going to pay the Pac-12 partner. These games could be worth, you know, $500,000 to $750,000 each. It's like getting a payday game while playing a home game. And so I think that that makes sense to me. There's just logic in it. It seems to work out, seems to present itself. The question I have is, how do you feel about seeing a game on a Sunday? Well, now, we just saw a game on a Sunday. USC and LSU, you know, moved to Sunday, and then Monday we had Boston College and Florida State. But it was a holiday three-day weekend. Labor Day's may be different. But how do you feel about a college football game taking on the NFL in the regular season of the NFL? The CW has this NFL shoulder programming with Bill Belichick on it, but they don't have any games. And so what I heard from Dennis Miller, the president of the CW, was, you know, hey, we've got a hole in our Sunday programming. And I could just see the wheels turning. Like, could they experiment? Could they dabble? I'm not saying you play every Sunday, but could they dabble with a few Sundays, particularly Labor Day weekend, and trying to play games before the NFL gets going? Could you have a week zero Sunday? Could you have a week one Sunday? That knocks out two right there. Would you dare go into the regular season and go head to head with the NFL? I wonder if Oregon State fans would tune in. I think they would. Washington State fans, maybe. But I kind of wonder, is there an audience? Is there an appetite? Could you position the game later in the day after that second game on the in the Pacific time zone concludes, like the one o'clock kickoff game is over? There's kind of this lull in between where you're waiting for Sunday night football on NBC or whatever, wherever it's going to air in the future. And so I just kind of wonder if they could position that game as like a 4 p.m. kickoff, a 3:30 kickoff in the Pacific time zone on the CW on Sundays. And I wonder if you could win in that hole, or do you stay away from it altogether? Because on one hand, taking on the NFL doesn't sound fun. But on the other hand, Oregon State and Washington State already find themselves up against games like Colorado, Ohio State, Miami. There was a real interest, I think, in week one to see what would happen. And it was only a couple hundred thousand plus fans that tuned, or viewers that tuned in to see Portland State, Washington State on the CW. And then it was far more that tuned in to see Oregon State and Idaho State. But, you know, those numbers are okay. Bob Thompson, the former Fox Sports Network's president, said it was a good start by the CW and the Pac-12 schools. But as the matchups get better, maybe you get better ratings. Last year, Florida State played a game on the CW and drew 1.2 million. So I think it's all about the matchup and your strategy. Would you rather go head-to-head with the NFL or head-to-head with major college football? Or if you go head-to-head with the NFL, can you find a little hole in the coverage in the later part of the day, right before Sunday night football, where you could work in a college game? Steven, would you tune into that?
I don't know that I would be locked in to it. I think I would tune in back and forth. I don't know that I would be definitely locked in unless it was a big-time college football game. But, you know, if it's a Oregon State, Washington versus Washington State type of game, like, I would tune in.
What if it misses, like, you know that window I'm talking about? Like, your second NFL game of the day kind of concludes, and then what happens? It's like an infomercial that comes on, right?
It's like an hour or so before Sunday night football starts. Yeah, I mean, I think that at that point, yeah, you would tune into that. You would watch that. But I think a lot of people, if you're an NFL fan, that you just kind of take your little break there, make sure your family's okay, and then you go back to watch.
Is that what you do? You check on your family?
Yeah, you just check on them. Make sure they're good? Okay.
Hey, everybody's okay.
Have we got dinner ready or what? What are we doing here? But no, I mean, I think I would flip back and forth. I would pay attention to it, but I wouldn't say that I'd be locked in. Like, like a regular Saturday, if it's a big time game like that, I would be locked into it. On a Sunday, I feel like it would be more of a flip situation.
TV gets what TV wants. I'm just curious, would the CW dare do it, or will they be inclined to put LIV golf and NASCAR and professional wrestling, the things that the other sports they have, would they be inclined to put those things into those windows, or would they really try to put college football in there? But I just think the CW and the Pac-12 and the ACC, this is a thing. Scott Barnes, the athletic director at Oregon State, joined John Wilner and I on our podcast and videocast. It's on YouTube now. And he talked about it. And I'm going into that conversation thinking, is it the CW? Is it the ACC? And everything Barnes is saying is lining up for me. And I'm going, there's no red flags there. I'm not seeing anything that tells me that, like, this is off the table. And it's almost like doing a scientific experiment, because he's not going to come out and say this is our plan. But he did say we have a plan.
like, if you're Oregon State, Washington State, and the CW, like, what, I mean, what is there really to lose to even try that? There's nothing to lose. Like, you're already kind of down at, you know, CW's lowest of the low. Washington State, Oregon State are not even considered a Power Four conference member. Like, what do you have to lose if you put it on a Sunday?
Nothing. Like, and you might not do your whole season that way. I think it'd be insane to try to play every game on a Sunday.
Right.
But, like, you know, Labor Day weekend, there's no NFL game in that window. Absolutely, you should be playing on a Sunday on that Labor Day weekend. And there's a couple of Saturdays as you get into December and into the late part of the season. The NFL's starting to creep into college territory. And the NFL's starting to go, okay, we're going to play some Saturday games. And so, you know, I think there's going to be a battle. And you're going to have to make hard decisions. We already do. It's already hard enough to figure out where to see the games, who's blacked out, what's DirecTV doing, what is the Big Ten Network and Comcast doing. There's all these things that are going on. But I'm fascinated by what's going to happen. A lot to talk about today. But this week we have spent a ton of time talking about Idaho and Oregon. What's wrong with Oregon? Why didn't Oregon play well? We did consider, I'll give you credit, listeners of the show, we have considered that Idaho might be good. We haven't disrespected the Vandals in that way. But you know what we haven't done? We haven't talked to their head football coach, Jason Eck. He joins next. I'm going to ask him what he saw, what they did right against Oregon, what is going on with Oregon's offensive line, what did they do on the defensive side of the ball, that trick play that they ran, what did they see that made them want to run that trick play. He can talk a little freer now with Oregon in the rearview mirror. Idaho's pivoting this week. They play at Wyoming. Their quarterback is out. They'll start another quarterback from the Portland metropolitan area, from Tualatin High School, in his place. It's going to be an interesting week for Idaho, but Jason Eck, kind enough to come on the program. And I feel a little bad that I didn't invite him on like on Tuesday, because we should have had him on and said, hey, what did you guys do right? Help us understand. Is this an Oregon thing or an Idaho thing? Well, Jason Eck is next. I hope you stick around for it.
Got the home of the truth. Back to the bald-faced truth with John Canzano on 750 The Game.
We've spent all week talking about Idaho without talking about Idaho. What am I talking about? I'm talking about Jason Eck and his team, the Idaho Vandals. They played Oregon way tougher than anybody expected. 24-14 was the final. The caused some hand-wringing and questions and raising eyebrows here in the Pacific Northwest as people are looking at Oregon going, hey, wait, are they not that good? Or is Idaho really good? Or what's going on there? I think it's a real disservice, though, that nobody has bothered to call Coach Jason Eck and ask him how he feels about it. So I'm doing that now. Here is Jason Eck. He is the head football coach at Idaho.
Hey, John, how you doing, man?
Hey, I'm doing well. I've been thinking about you all week, and we've been talking about you all week, and I've been writing about you all week, and then I thought, why have I not had this guy on my radio show, to talk about... It was a pretty damn good performance by you guys, and I know you don't want to take a moral victory, but you guys played really well.
Yeah, you know, that was a tough a tough game, you know, to play one of the top five teams in the country on the road. So I think there's, you know, I don't think we really accomplished anything, but there's some great things to build off in that game that can give us confidence, and if we can keep building on that and keep improving from there, I think we have a chance to be an excellent team this year.
When you walk away, when you go into the locker room after a game like that, you know, how do you kind of, what's your messaging immediately? Or, you know, as a coach, I guess psychology is always involved.
Yeah, you know, I told them, you know, one, that I was proud of them, and I think one of the biggest challenges when you have a game like that is getting everybody in that room to believe, because nobody on the outside believed, you know, we could play them close. We were, you know, 40-something point underdogs. But to have a chance in that game, if you go in there with your team thinking that that's really the case, you're kind of doomed to start with. And, you know, I knew that was really critical, because they were a team that's kind of put it on teams. I mean, the last couple of years, they'd scored 70 and 80 points against Big Sky teams. And so I wanted to, you know, make the team feel good, because I really do think we believed going in there that we could win that game. And, we certainly made it a game that we had chances to win. But I also wanted to remind them, you know, there's not, you know, I said this exact thing. They're not going to, you know, I've never seen a ring inscribed at the end of the year when, if you get championship rings, that we played Oregon within 10 points. You know, they say conference champions or national champions. So, you know, we still got a lot of work to do to try to accomplish, you know, our goals there. And, you know, I think it's, as we're building our program here, I think we still have, You know, a little bit, because they had about 20 bad years, you know, before our staff got here, where they only, I think they had two winning seasons in those 20 years. So there's a lot of people around here kind of treat you like you won a game like that just by playing it close. But in reality, that's not the case. We got to keep getting better and translating to wins.
I want to maybe drill down a little bit on what you guys were doing well, especially on the D-line. Bruce Barnum, your colleague in the Big Sky, just sang your praises the other day. He was saying, you know, look, they will get you with alignment and shading and pinch a guy here and slant a guy there. But what you know, without getting too far in the secret sauce, what were you guys doing that was effective on the D-line? Because you had some success disrupting Oregon.
Yeah, you know, we played 11 guys on the D-line, and I think that was critical to our success. You know, they didn't sub a lot in the O-line, so having 11 guys rotating fresh against, you know, five guys on their side, I think, helped us. I thought our effort was tremendous in the game. You know, I think we have a couple of guys who, you know, are Power 5-level players, Dallas Afalava and Keyshawn James Newby, and they did what you'd want them to do. You know, they got the sacks in the game and the TFLs. And again, we did a good job. I think Coach Jackson, our coordinator, and Coach Loney, our D-line coach, you know, we had a good game plan. We didn't always just stay static. We switched the fronts a little bit. We had some line movements. We were aggressive with some blitzes and, you know, tried to keep them off balance so we weren't just, you know, sitting targets where they knew right where we were going to be and they could tee off on us.
You know, in scouting and for a game one or game planning for a game one, you go back to last season and maybe you try to figure out what personnel is new and what they might implement. Did Oregon come out and do anything that surprised you, or were they just kind of doing the stuff they did last year, or what did you see?
No, they definitely had some new wrinkles. You know, I think they played some different coverages on defense. You know, they had played a lot of what we call a bracket coverage last year. We expected more of that, and they mixed in some different coverages. You know, offensively, they had some new wrinkles. I mean, some of the things we saw, like, you know, jet sweep to number 15, Tez is a great player. You know, we expected that and repped that a lot during the week. You know, they had some you know, some new wrinkles in the passing game that I think played to, you know, Gabriel's strengths. So I would say it was a normal evolution. You know, they had new wrinkles. I think their core identity didn't change much from the year before. They probably played a little bit more, you know, a zero nose front where they lined up on a nose guard than they had played last year. You know, we thought they'd play us a little bit more in a four down line, you know, even look, especially when we were in 11 personnel, and they ended up playing us with more of that, you know, oaky front or bare front, so that was a little different than we expected, but, you know, it wasn't no drastic changes, I would say.
You got a great stop from your defense on a fourth down and then brilliantly came back with a little razzle-dazzle in the next play. Can you take me through the psychology of that sudden change and what you're thinking as, you know, your offense is going on the field?
Well, I had talked to Coach Sleissner, even our offensive coordinator, before that stop, you know, even, you know, right when we got off the field on offense, and I had asked him, I said, I thought it was that play. I said, which is your favorite trick play we have? You know, what do you feel the best about it? I just said, hey, we need a spark. You know, we had 0 points at that time. You know, the defense had gotten a stop on a fake punt earlier that gave us field position on the plus side of the field. We didn't do anything with it. So I just thought we needed, like, a momentum play, and then it ended up being a double momentum play. We get a huge stop on the fourth and one, and then we call that play. And I think their coaching staff might have anticipated us going for a shot or a trick play there because they blitzed into it. Mm. But I thought it was just tremendous execution by our players. You know, Hamper from West Lynn did a great job of, you know, he gets the pitch on the reverse, pitches it, and then gets the key block to give Jack the time to get it off. So I think that play and, you know, our view of those trick plays, those things are plays that we run over and over again, and we've had that play in the arsenal, you know, all 3 years that we've been here at Idaho, and so that's a play that is really like a base play to us, even though some people would say it's a trick play. We've repped it a lot so that no matter what look we get, we can execute the play.
So you're telling me, like, even before it, you know, it's four down territory, or Oregon goes on fourth, you're already talking that, hey, your first next offensive play may be that trick play.
Yeah, because we just needed a spark. And, you know, like I said, I think sometimes when you're struggling, you got to have a little creativity. And then, you know, we weren't, you know, just lining up and knocking them off the ball. We needed something to kind of keep them off balance and just get a little momentum. And then it was double momentum because the defensive play was huge. And then, you know, that kept the momentum. And then the next series was our first series where we really drove the length of the field and went down and got a touchdown, I think, on a, you know, 75-yard touchdown drive. So I think that kind of got our offense going that play.
Now, your last year at Wisconsin, I was covering the Big Ten as a beat reporter at Purdue. And so I think Purdue and IU may have, one of them played you that year. I can't remember which. And so you may have been on the field in a game that I covered, I mean, which makes me feel old now. But give me an idea. You're at Wisconsin as a player. Were you thinking coaching at that time?
I think coaching was always in my back pocket. You know, my father was a college basketball coach. So he was, I don't know, there's probably not a lot of people who have done that, if anybody, but he was a Division I head coach at the University of Toledo from 87 to 91. And then, like when I was at Wisconsin as a player, he was an assistant at Loyola University of Chicago. And I just saw, he really enjoyed what he was doing. He enjoyed, going to the office every day. He never felt like he was punching the clock. So I think that, that had an effect on me as a kid wanting to do that. My mom kind of discouraged it because, the negative sides of coaching.
Right, she saw it.
Yeah, we had to move around a lot. I was all set to go to high school in Toledo, and then, we ended up, my dad got let go there, and we had to move. So my mom was trying to talk me out of it, but then right after, 98, was my senior year, and I graduated in 4 years. I really could have came back for another year eligibility, but I was a backup, so I went right into being a grad assistant. And I think right after we got back from the Rose Bowl, that 98 year was, we played Purdue that time. They threw it 80 times with Drew Brees.
Yes.
Didn't really stop him. And that play, that's always stuck with me. That was kind of our game plan against Oregon, is let's not give up big plays. Let's keep the ball in front of us.
Yeah.
That game, Drew made a few mistakes and threw some interceptions. Now, credit to Dylan Gabriel. He never threw it to us. We kind of took away the big plays, but he kept taking what we were giving him and throwing underneath and was very accurate against us. But, there was – that game plan was a little bit crafted by Barry Alvarez, seeing what he did against Drew Brees in 1998.
Let me ask you this. I mean, so the game ends, and then naturally people in our footprint go to, what's wrong with Oregon? Oh, gosh, they didn't win by 40. What's happening here? But I wanted to be careful. When I wrote, I said, hey, first paragraph, let's consider the possibility that Idaho had something to do with this, like that Idaho might be a really good FCS team that plays deep into the playoffs. Did your guys hear any of that noise coming out of that? Does it motivate you guys to be like, hey, we have something to prove again this week against Wyoming?
Yeah, for the most part, I try to have the guys not read into the noise and focus on what we're telling them, in that locker room. And again, I think that, to me, that's only a good story, us playing Oregon tough, if now we can keep building on that, keep getting better, play great against Wyoming this week, where I think, you're playing a team like Oregon, you could play really, really well. And I think on defense, we did play really, really well. Probably on offense and special teams, we definitely could play better. But you could play really well against a team that's that good and loose, where really the rest of the games on our schedule, if we play really, really well, we're going to have a heck of a chance to win the game. So, we got to focus on us and getting better and just executing at a higher level. Because I think that game, just shows us kind of the possibilities for this team if we can keep growing and improving.
How are you feeling about the quarterback? You had an injury at quarterback. You're hoping to get that guy back mid-season, but how are you feeling this week?
I have a lot of confidence in Jack Wagner. It was bittersweet because you feel bad for Jack Lane. He had really worked hard and has been a great leader for us and is a guy who really invests, probably the hardest worker on our football team with preparation and things. So your heart goes out for him, but we're very excited about Wags. He's a talented young man right there from that from Tualatin right there in the Portland area. And, he was actually, we were able to get Jack Lane to walk on when we first got here because they had signed a quarterback already in that class, and we had like 9 quarterbacks at the time. So Wagner was the first scholarship quarterback that we recruited here as a staff when we got hired. And, so he has all the traits we're looking for. He's athletic, he's big, he can throw it, very strong arm. So I think it's a tremendous opportunity for him. And the unfortunate part of football is usually when you get your opportunity in football, it's usually because of misfortune to someone else. I wouldn't have this opportunity at Idaho to be the head coach if it wasn't for misfortune for someone else. So, he's got a great opportunity. I expect him to play well this week.
Yeah, you've got Lake Oswego, you've got Tualatin, you've got Camas, you've got Westland. You're doing a good job. I feel like we should almost adopt you as like the satellite college program from this region.
No, we want to recruit, Idaho, Oregon, and Washington all as in state. And I think that's, I think we're an excellent academic school. I think, probably UC Davis, I would say, is the only school in the Big Sky that has probably better academics than us. I think we're probably clearly the second. So in the Northwest region, I think that can really be a great selling point. It's a beautiful residential campus. And those areas where you can drive, you can get over here from Portland in, 5.5-6 hours. You can get over here from Seattle in, 4.5-5 hours, depending on where you're at. Those are areas we hammer in recruiting. And Coach Luke Schleichner, our offensive coordinator, is our Portland recruiter and has really done a tremendous job there getting some great talent.
Well, you guys did a great job as a staff. Your team played hard, played to win. And, you know, you put a scare in Oregon. And so this whole week has been spent with people going, what are they going to do against Boise? And your guys did that. So yeah, I know it's not a consolation, but go get Wyoming, and I'll get you back on the show at some point, Coach.
Hey, thanks so much, John. Appreciate all you. Right. V's up.
Yep, take care. Thank you. There he goes. We have spent all week long talking about Idaho without talking about Idaho. You tell me if you're a Duck fan. You feel better now? You feel a little bit better about the Boise State game? I made my picks at johnconzano.com. If you want to see my picks in their entirety, my reasoning, my thoughts, my predictions, go to johnconzano.com. The week two picks are out. I hit 80% against the spread last week. Can I stay hot? Leave it here. You got the BFT.
Back to the Bald-Faced Truth with John Canzano on 750 The Game.
Well, we heard from Jason Eck, the Idaho football coach. About time we got him on the show. I'm kicking myself for not getting him on like on Tuesday, Wednesday. Why wait till Thursday to have the guy who engineered the problems against Oregon on the show? Can we put it to rest? I don't think we can put it to rest until we see Oregon play a football game. But, Stephen, you heard the coach at Idaho talk about playing 11 guys, doing some things they saw on film. You know, hear him talk about, you know, his game plan, his approach psychologically. They felt like they could win the game. In the end, are you left with an answer? Was it an Oregon problem, or was it an Idaho strength that we saw on Saturday? Can we say that in front of seeing Oregon play Boise State, or do you still have questions?
I think we need to see it. We need to see it against Boise State. I found it very interesting, John, that he said that, you know, when they were scouting them offensively, they did exactly what they thought they would do. And they knew exactly how to stop it, basically. Like, what Oregon did on Saturday is what they expected the Oregon to do on Saturday. They had it scouted out perfectly, where defensively, he even said they were different than the year before. In 2023, they played differently than they did on Saturday. But offensively, they kind of figured out what they were going to do, and they played a really good job against it. We need to see if that changes. Was it just a really vanilla game plan from Oregon that Idaho was exactly ready for? And so it was just a combination, you know, a bad storm right there where Idaho prepared for something, and that's exactly what they got, so they were ready for it. Or was Oregon just going so vanilla that, you know, anybody could have stopped them on that day? I need to see it now. Like that comment that the Eck made right there was very alarming if I was a Duck fan, because if it's that obvious what they're going to do with a bunch of new players, I don't know. Like, can they change that up in a week, or is that, you know, or was it so vanilla they can change it up? I don't know.
But Oregon should have been able to, even if they go, hey, we're running, you know, this play in this formation, I just think should have been able to physically impose themselves against Idaho. Like, you know, I've been on football teams and been around practices of football teams where the defense knows what the offense is doing. But if the offense is physically imposing and talented, they still can effectively run the play. And that concerns me a little bit. The fact that they played 11 guys against Oregon's 5 on a hot day. I know it was a little bit later in the afternoon that kicks off, but we all know that it was warm on the turf. It was a warm day. You were at the stadium. How warm was that as you were, like, walking in, tailgating, all that?
Yeah, it was pretty warm, especially, you know, as the game started going into the second quarter. If the sun was on you, it was very hot. So it was a very hot day. I think a little more hot, or, you know, warm than I actually thought it was going to be. So maybe that did have some type of impact on the Oregon team as well. That's why I can't put it to rest and say, yeah, it's just an Idaho thing. Like, maybe Idaho's going to be really good and Oregon will be fine. Like, I need to see it. I do have questions now. Going into the season, I thought Oregon was going to get 11 wins. I thought they'd be above their 10.5 win total. I'm not changing my mind on that, but I need to see them perform better in week two, or else, even if it's just a close win over Boise State, I think there's going to be a lot more questions that will line up.
I think Oregon's going to play angry on Saturday. I think they have to be pissed hearing everybody talk all week about what's wrong, what could be happening, what is going on there. Trayshawn Holden, Ducks wide receiver, talking about it at practice. He says it's a mindset.
I feel like we probably needed to improve really everything. Our mindset is probably the main thing, just going into that game we already think we had to win, and we can't go into games like that. So that's why I've been our main focus this week, and we definitely plan to improve on that.
It could just be that they, you know, they played Portland State last year, and they put a snowman up, scored 81 points, and they thought, we're going to do that again.
And now, first drive, yeah, they came out and scored a touchdown as well.
Yeah, and then they went, okay, it's going to be this all day. Who's playing? How many guys are getting touchdowns today? And it didn't work out that way. So let's see what they do in game two. I was thinking about Portland State, too, and I started looking at the substitution chart in Portland State's game against Oregon last season. Portland State subbed in and out a lot of different players last year. I almost feel like Bruce Barnum approached these openers last year giving up 80 and this year giving up 70. I almost feel like he approached them from a mindset of, I don't want to get guys hurt, and I don't care if the final score is embarrassing. I don't want to say they're throwing games, because that's not what I'm saying, but I looked at the substitution for Portland State in Saturday's game. They had like five players who were like in the second and third series of the game. Five starters came out of the game. And I'm looking at that going, you know, was there some issue with air quality? No, Washington State wasn't doing it. Like, you know, sometimes you'll see that where, you know, somebody will be like, hey, there's an air quality issue. You got to get guys out of the game. I kind of wonder, and I want to ask Bruce Barnum this next week in the most tactful way. Are you going into those games knowing you're probably going to lose? And because you know you're probably going to lose, are you just going, I'm getting my starting guys out because, you know, he's got to play Weber State this week in week two. That's a conference game. That's a game he needs to win. Is he just going, hey, a win is a win, a loss is a loss. I don't care if I get embarrassed. Or was Washington State really that much better than Portland State last week?
What do you think is more important to Bruce Barnum? Is it to compete in these type of games, or is it to make the playoffs on the FCS level?
Getting to the playoffs would mean everything to Portland State. So I think he knows he's got five. He plays five ranked teams later in the year. And he's just squirrely enough. We hear him every week. He's just squirrely enough as a coach to kind of go, I'm going to approach this totally different. And he said, remember he said, I know if I'm going to win the game at halftime. Mm-hmm. Is he saying, if I don't think I can win the game at halftime, I'm playing my third and fourth and fifth string guys?
That's the way I hear it. I remember hearing that against, it was last season against Oregon. He kind of said, you know what, first quarter, you know, we'll kind of know if we'll play the guys or not. And then it turned out to be an 80 spot. So I think you're right. I think he more looks at these opponents as a money game.
Get your money. Do that? Is that fair to your kids? Is it fair to your program to get 80 points put on you, get 70 points put on you? 150 points, two games.
I mean, I wouldn't like it. I'd say that. I don't know. Fair, I don't know if fair is the right word, but it is a little embarrassing to see that happening week after week. They play Boise State later this season as well, so we'll see what happens in that game.
They play five ranked teams, Portland State does. So, plus, they play Washington State and Boise State. So they play five ranked teams of the FCS division. And I kind of just wonder, I'm going to ask Bruce Barnum next week when he comes on. All right, look, your schedule's brutal. Did you go into the season opener waving a white flag essentially from the start? Like, as soon as, you know, you're down by two scores, you kind of just go, eh. Because if you look at the substitution chart, five starters on defense came out, Stephen, in the first quarter. And I'm going, that's not an injury. That is a philosophy going on.
But if they make the playoffs, it'll all be worth it, won't it?
Yeah, it goes away. Yeah, totally. But here's the thing. If they win this week, it goes away. Because if they go to Weber State and win, you know, Weber State played Washington tougher than they played Washington State, you know. And so I kind of got to think, if they go to Weber State and win somehow this week, that Bruce Barnum feels like, I got what I needed. I got my $563,000 check from Washington State. I don't know why it's 563, but I got my check from Washington State, and I got a loss, which I expected, and I kept my guys healthy. For the most part, you know, he talked about the injuries, but he wouldn't go in the weeds, but we'll see. We'll see. It got my wheels turning because Roy called in yesterday. Caller Roy called in and he said, hey, that's embarrassing. And he's right. It is embarrassing to give up 80 and then 70. And then I started thinking, like, is Bruce Barnum so abstract as a coach that he goes, I don't care if I give up 100 points as long as I come out healthy. And if he's going in with that mentality, because if you really think about it, he had, you know, several years ago they played Washington when Washington had real fangs. Washington went to the playoff that year. Portland State played them in the preseason, and Washington beat them down to the point where you had multiple players who suffered season-ending injuries, concussions. It was not pretty. And I just kind of wonder if Barnum learned something in that game where he went, look, we weren't going to win. Why did I have my starters in the second half? Why did I have my starters in the second quarter? If we're not going to win the game, you know, why not treat this as a scrimmage? Let them have their fun. Let them score a 70 or whatever they're going to do. And, you know, we live to play another day. I don't know. All right, coming up in the 4 o'clock hour, Jaden Robinson, defensive back, Oregon State, will be joining us. Steven and I will be giving our picks and leans for the college football weekend. We'll play Punch It Audio, where Lamar Jackson tells you he doesn't have friends in the NFL, not with quarterbacks. Why not? Nick Eliotti has some concerns about what? You'll hear it. Leave it here. You got the BFT.
BFT. From the PacWest Center in downtown Portland, presented by High Caliber Millwrights, here's John Canzano with the bald-faced truth.
I got a couple of critics who are saying on social media and in my inbox, quit crowing about your 12-3 record against the spread. You're just setting yourself up for a fall this week. Steven, where do you stand on that? Because if I went 3-12, I'd be talking about it just as much, I think.
Would you? I don't know. I don't know if you'd be talking about it as much. I mean, I'll be honest. I don't think you'd be talking about it as much.
I think so. I think you'd be saying, look how dismal a week I had.
I feel like you've said it every day this week, though. I mean, we had Monday off, so it's only been 3 days, but I feel like you've mentioned three. I don't know. I'd be like you, though. If I went 12-3, yeah, I'm talking about it all the time.
Why not?
Yeah.
I'm not superstitious. I'm not going to jinx myself. We're going to give our leans and our picks on some of the games coming up. Leans and picks. What I mean by leans, well, if you have an inkling of how a game's going to go, but you're not quite ready to lock your pick in, you're leaning one way or another. But Steven and I will give our picks on some of these games and beyond coming up. We'll also hear from Jaden Robinson, defensive back, Oregon State. They head to San Diego, where they're getting out of this weather, and they're heading to San Diego on Friday, where they will play Saturday, but they leave on Friday to go play against San Diego State. That should be an interesting one for Oregon State. Big opportunity for Oregon State, and we shall see how that unfolds for Oregon State. Jaden Robinson will be joining us in about 20 minutes to talk about that. Anna will be along for the 5 at 5. We will be breaking right after about 5:15 or so. We will be breaking to an NFL game right here in Portland on 750 The Game. So if you're listening across the state on your affiliate, you will be getting some different programming coming up at about 5:15. So we got to jam this in right now. Steven, giddy up.
We interrupt this broadcast with a special announcement from the Bald-Faced Truth Headquarters.
Hey, we're all about truth, justice, and the American way here, okay? Which is why we've spanned the globe and pulled the top audio cuts of the day.
You're going to hear little snippets of sound.
Hey, it's time for Punch It Audio.
Presented by First Call Heating and Cooling.
Well, let's start with Lamar Jackson, quarterback of the Ravens. A lot of people asking him, you know, are you friends with Patrick Mahomes? Are you friends with these other QBs? He says Patrick Mahomes is great, but he doesn't really have a relationship with any other quarterback in the league. Lamar Jackson, punch it.
I don't have a relationship with him. I don't think I have a relationship with any quarterback in the league. I don't take anything from him, anything from him. You know, I just play my game. But he's a great quarterback. I'm gonna say that he's a great quarterback. He has the accolades to prove it. But man, he made things happen on the field that make his team successful.
I think your wager tonight on Thursday Night Football is going to end up looking smart. For the Chiefs, it's a marathon. For the Ravens, there's something to prove tonight. The way they went out, not playing their game, trying to throw the ball instead of do what they do best, run the ball, play defense, let Lamar Jackson make some plays. I kind of feel like it's Baltimore's night tonight on Thursday Night Football. Steven, I think you're picking. You're getting three?
I am. I'm getting three, feeling good about it. I feel like this is going to be a close game. Like, right, you know, I feel like this is going to come right down the wire. But I have a question. Do you have a problem with Lamar Jackson saying he doesn't take anything from Patrick Mahomes' game and adds it to his game, with Mahomes being maybe the best ever? Like, I don't have a problem with it, but I feel like there's a lot of people out there who have had a problem with that comment that he made. Like, you should be evolving your game into trying to be like Patrick Mahomes because you are so athletically gifted. Do you have a problem with that?
I think I don't want him to copy Patrick Mahomes. If I was his coordinator, I wouldn't want to say, I don't want you to do what Patrick does. I want you to do it, play to your strengths. But I think he has to understand that if you're watching Patrick Mahomes play football, you're watching a player who is out there playing to his strengths in such a way that, you know, he's doing things that we don't typically see quarterbacks do. Some of the throws he makes, some of the creativity that you see, it's a little Steph Curry-like in a football sense. You know, you'll just see some things that are just different. And I think that's okay. But I don't mind him saying, I don't have friends. I don't have a relationship. I don't need these guys to be buddies. I just don't. Pivoting to the college game, Coach Prime talking about Travis Hunter, Shedeur Sanders. They are not currently high on the Heisman watch list. Coach Prime has a theory on it. Punch it.
Yeah, you got a guy who threw for the most yards in college football. You got a guy who was proved that he was the most spectacular player in college football. Shouldn't those two be talked about all week about the two leading Heisman guys? Or
every
weekly award that was given out should have gone to those two guys.
Yeah.
But it's almost like, no, we can't do that. Their coach is Deion Sanders. We're not going to do that.
That's not it. That's not the problem. The problem was 4-8. The problem is nobody thinks, I won't say nobody. Most people think at best this is a 6-win team. Awards don't go, especially Heisman awards, they don't go to players on losing teams. You know, Alex Rodriguez on the Texas Rangers. You know, nobody's going, oh, that guy's the greatest player in baseball history. No, he's a really good player on a bad team. So when you're the quarterback at Colorado and in your team, like the ceiling for your team is 6 wins, 7 wins. You're not going to get that consideration for the Heisman. It's not fair. I mean, but frankly, if we were just saying who's the best player in college football, NFL scouts would tell you there are guys that are going to be picked in the top 5-6 picks that nobody will talk about that are fantastic players that are going to be impact players at the next level. Colorado has got a big opportunity this weekend to show where they are, how much they belong, how much they deserve. Go out on the field against Nebraska in what is a revenge game for the Huskers and prove that you belong. You're a 7 to 7.5 point underdog on the road at Nebraska. Travis Hunter is great. Shedeur Sanders has impressed me as a passer, beginning to see him more and more as an NFL player. But they're not going to get Heisman run if they don't get wins.
But and that's the thing, is they're getting credit already. I think you look at NFL mock drafts, like they're top 5 picks. Like Travis Hunter and Shedeur are both top 5, top 10 picks. Like that's bigger credit than being in a Heisman race in my mind. Mm-hmm. Like I'd rather be in the top 10 than win the Heisman. They're not going to win the Heisman, Colorado, because you're right. They're not going to win 8, 9, 10 games. But if you're a top 10 pick, like you're getting the credit that you're deserved.
I just didn't like that he says it's cuz of me, it's cuz of Coach Prime that they don't get the respect. Like, I don't think that's it. I think it's 4-8. I'm a Heisman voter, okay? 4-8, I'm not looking at your roster. You know, you're not in the top 25 in an impact player. I'm probably not looking at your roster, period. That's why you're not getting the accolades. It's not you. It's your record. Your team's not good. And if they go out and prove it on the field this week and, you know, Shedeur throws for 500, and they beat Nebraska as a 7-point underdog, all of a sudden they're going to get votes in the AP poll, and they're going to get rise up the rankings, and people are going to go, that guy can carry his team. He's a Heisman. He's Heisman worthy. Now, the Heisman Trophy as an award, it's not a perfect award. And I've argued in years that, like, you know, you could pick the left tackle that somebody never heard of. And, you know, Penei Sewell should have got Heisman votes at Oregon. He might have been the best player in the country. And, you know, he didn't get any. Steve Sarkisian, Texas coach. They have a big game. They're playing Michigan. He says going on the road to play Alabama last year helped his Texas team. Punch it.
I think it's helpful. You know, we've got 46 guys, I was counting today, that were on that trip with us last year that'll be with us this year in Ann Arbor. And I think it, you know, it goes to the preparation side of it. What does it take? Not only from a physical standpoint, but a mental standpoint, from a camaraderie standpoint. You got to have the ability to play as a team and you get in these types of environments, and it's going to have to take a team effort Saturday.
Team effort, 9 a.m. Saturday on Fox. I also happened to see the Fresno State game against Michigan. I watched it. 30-10 final score, but both offenses in that game had 18 first downs. Michigan outgained Fresno State by 25 yards. I didn't love Michigan's win. It looked good on paper, but if anybody watched it, you know Michigan's vulnerable. I don't think they're a top 10 team. They're playing Texas, who definitely is a top 10 team. So I think Sark, he can talk about the comfort of playing on the road at Alabama last year. Okay, that's great. It's experience. But I think Sark's got the better team. We'll get into the picks a little bit later. Javonte McCoy, Oregon State quarterback. Max Brown, looking at McCoy's performance in week one, said, hey, did everything he was asked to do. Punch it.
But I also thought Javonte McCoy did everything they asked him to do. Super efficient, got the ball out of his hands, had that one long shot down the field, and feels like there was a lot more left in the playbook that they could get to. But I think Oregon State's quarterback room is deep.
I don't know about that. I didn't love the room in the spring game. I think there's some murkiness in that room. McCoy had 114 passing yards, 9 of 10 passing, missed a wide-open throw that would have been a long touchdown pass. It was a bad throw. I think the first quarter was clunky, and it was checkdowns. It was small throws. He had a 55-yard touchdown later, but his other 8 completions went for 59 yards. It was a lot of dinks and dunks. If I'm San Diego State, I am loading up the box, and I'm looking over at Javonte McCoy, and I'm saying, beat me.
Can the Oregon State Beavers win with a game plan similar to what they had against Idaho State? Not exactly, you know, 58 runs to 14 passes, but can they win with that type of game plan against a San Diego State team?
I think they're going to win a lot of games that way this season. And I think they're not going to be I just don't see, like, wildly impressive, blow-you-away performances with the ball in the air. But I love Oregon State's running back room. Forget the quarterback room. There is real depth in the running back room. And, you know, they've got a couple of transfers in there. They've got a player in Jam Griffin who has got a ton of experience. I like the running back room. The quarterback room? I don't know. I don't really see it. But Javonte McCoy's got some experience. I think that helps him. But Anthony Hankerson, transfer, Jam Griffin, we know what he can do. I think the strength of Oregon State is clear. It's going to be the run game, and yes, I think they can win games if they go, all right, you know, ball's coming, everybody knows it, everybody knows what we're doing, we're just going to run it at you. I think they'll win, you know, 4 or 5 just doing that if they want.
They did that under Jonathan Smith. I mean, think back to the USC game in L.A. USC knew they were running the football. It did not matter.
How about the Civil War in 2022?
That too, yeah.
They just ran the ball 16 straight times. And
down by 20 points or whatever in the second half. We're not going to pass. We're going to run every time.
They won that game with 60 passing yards. I still don't know how they won that game.
But do they have the offensive line and the defense to continue doing that this season?
Against this kind of competition, yes. San Diego State's not deep. Not very deep. They're going through some of the same things that other programs that are changing coaches are going through. But, you know, Oregon's on the schedule next week. Purdue at home. will be a little tougher, more physical. Colorado State will be a tougher game. UNLV will be a tougher game. Cal will be tougher, especially because Cal's defense, Justin Wilcox knows what to do. He knows what he's doing. Boise State in the season finale. But, heck, I looked at Oregon State in the opener and I went, you know, I think they could be bowl eligible just doing what they did. We shall see. Big game Saturday night. Nick Aliotti says he has concerns about Washington State's defense. Aliotti's smart. Punch it.
But, yeah, I have to be honest with you. You know, to give up 30 points and 450 yards to a team that is not in your division, although they've been good running the ball, that being Portland State, a little bit concerning to me. Also, the secondary appeared to be young and let guys get behind them that wasn't touchdown passes, but guys were behind them. So I do have a little bit concern for Washington State defensively, but we'll see. Bigger test this weekend against Texas Tech.
Yeah, big weekend, Texas Tech. I feel like, you know, John Mateer, the quarterback at Washington State, is going to be the difference in whatever happens. But I really liked Washington State's running backs. I liked Mateer. He had 5 touchdown passes. Made it look pretty easy against Portland State. Statistically, as I broke down that game and looked at it, I think, you know, Portland State was, you know, I don't want to say they were out of the game quick, but it was 22-7 at the end of the first quarter. And then I kind of feel like, you know, Washington State almost had 50 by half. And then the second half was, I think, a lot of Washington State going, you know, let's get out of here. And they still put up 70. I need a bigger sample size, I guess, is what I'm saying. Spencer Danielson is the coach at Boise State. He's only coached 5 games. Dylan Gabriel is the quarterback at Oregon. He has quarterbacked 49 games. Danielson talking about Dylan Gabriel. Punch it.
I mean, you talk about a guy that is an absolute matchup nightmare. I mean, all the stuff he's getting, publicity preseason and now Heisman, he deserves it. I mean, he's a guy that can make all the throws. And what shows up a ton on film, too, is if it's not there, and I live this myself, is he can take out and go the distance. It's not take off and maybe you get a first down. It's an explosive run. He's also got a master of the offense. You can just see his leadership. I like to watch interviews of quarterbacks that were playing and getting to know him. I mean, he's a leader. I mean, you see the stuff that he's doing for his team, the humility that he has with that unit, the leadership he has. So not only is he a big-time quarterback with a monster arm and can run, He's the firepower that offense has to continue to be efficient. And I know that, I mean, we're going to see their absolute best on Saturday night. I know Dylan Gabriel is going to be at his best. I know those coaches. And they're going to get this team ready to roll, and so will we.
Spencer Danielson sandbagging there a little bit? Probably. But I also think Boise State's walking into a hornet's nest. I think Oregon's going to be mad.
Now, Dylan Gabriel was at UCF when Spencer Danielson was the DC at Boise State. He did run for 65 yards in that game. Do you think we'll see Dylan Gabriel run a little bit more against Boise State? Because he got sacked, you know, a couple times. He was 3 carries minus 23 yards. He has to run for Oregon to be better on the offensive side.
I think he needs to run when it's there. I don't want to see him get hurt. I don't need a broken collarbone from your star quarterback second game of the season. But he's got to run when it's there, and he was hesitant to run last week against Idaho. You could see it. He wanted to throw the football. Angel Reese says there's no hate between her and Caitlin Clark. Punch it.
Caitlin is an amazing player, and I've always thought she was an amazing player. We've been playing each other since high school. So I think it's really just the fans, her fans, the Iowa fans, mm-hmm. now the Indiana fans that are like, they ride for her, and I respect that respectfully, but sometimes it's very disrespectful. Mm-hmm. I think there's a lot of racism when it comes to it, and I don't believe she stands on any of that. But when it comes to death threats, like, I'm talking about people who have come down to my address, following me home. Like, it's come down to that. Multiple occasions, people have made AI pictures of me, like, naked. Literally.
Really?
They have sent it to my family members. My family members are like, uncles are sending it to me like,
no!
Are you naked on Instagram? It sucks to see that, and it's really hard that I have to go through that, and now seeing other players even having to go through that. But like, at the end of the day, it's a game that we do both love, but there is no hate.
Who are these uncles that are sending their nieces photos? I would, you know, look, to the people who are busy making AI pictures that aren't, you know, that are like tasteless, get a life. If you're following Angel Reese or any other player home, get a life. If you're making death threats, get a life. Be normal. But she's hitting on something that I think is a really sad thing that has happened with the WNBA sort of debuts of these star players that were so great in college. It's gotten ugly. It's gotten catty. It's gotten petty. Charles Barkley talked about it.
If you got a bunch of dudes in a room and says, let's fuck up the WNBA, we could have came up a master plan. What these women have done. This girl is incredible. What she did in college for women's basketball, what she's doing in the WNBA.
Fever were 1-8. They have a winning record now.
But the number of attention, eyeballs, she's brought to college and the pros, and for these women to have this petty jealousness, you say to yourself, damn, what is going on here?
It's part of it. There is some pettiness and some jealousy. But I also think it's bigger than that. I think there is racism involved. I think there is sexism involved. I think that people are picking up sides. I think it's really sad that this has become kind of the narrative of the season. And I think, you know, for fans and for players and for that league, maybe some of it is they never had had the spotlight on the game like this before. And all of a sudden it's, you know, people are watching and listening like never before. And people who aren't used to handling it aren't handling it well. All right. Jaden Robinson, Oregon State defensive back, is coming up. Steven and I are going to give our picks later this hour, plus the 5 at 5. Leave it here.
Back to the Bald-Faced Truth with John Canzano on 750 The Game.
Going in, it was something we wanted to do. It's an identity piece for us. Something we felt we were really good at, I think, up front, tight ends wise. And then we got three really good backs that can run the football. So that was going into the game. We wanted to run the ball and run it well. And then as the game was going, you know, that was kind of how it was going. We were running the ball well and we were being physical and moving the line of scrimmage. And hey, let's just keep imposing our will, like you said. And that's what they did.
Oregon State with a win in the opener against Idaho State. Trent Bray, 1-0 as a coach. He got tossed in the cryo pool, the cold pool, after the game. Every week, Jaden Robinson, defensive back, Oregon State, joins us on Thursdays, courtesy of Jamba. Life is better blended. Jaden Robinson joining us. What was it like to throw Trent Bray into the cold tub?
Hey, man, it was fun. You know, his first dub, you know, I was excited for him. You know, it was a good job we did out there.
Did he handle it well, or he didn't resist, did he? Like, or is, I guess when you got a bunch of guys urging you into the pool, you kind of just go with it.
Yeah, 150-plus football players, it's overly. You're not winning that battle. You're going to go in that tub. I'm sorry. He took it well, though.
Give me an idea, like, for the rest of us, how cold is the cryo pool? Like, you know, and do you go in there every day? Like, explain to us, because I've seen the locker room. I've seen it. But give our listeners an idea, Jaden, of what that pool is like and how you use it.
You know, use a cold tub kind of as like the finisher. You know, the hot tub gets you more loose. You know, the cold tub kind of restores, you know, what you work throughout the day. Like if you're really sore, it'll take a lot of the lactic acid and a lot of the soreness out of your legs. But this cold is, it's kind of like late cold, you know, depending on what time of the year it is, where you are.
Okay.
But, you know.
I like that.
Yeah.
I like that. From a kid who grew up in the Seattle area, you go lake cold. I like that. Jaden Robinson is with us. All right, you got to play a football game, man, and the defense played really well. What did that feel like, to get out, break a sweat, tackle somebody else, defend passes?
You know, it felt good to get out there with the guys again. You know, it's been a while since, you know, I've hit the ground personally. So, you know, but going through it, you know, it was fun. You know, it felt good to get back out there, you know, execute calls that we had going on, you know, communicate with each other, see how fun everybody is during the game, you know, how much of a time everyone's having, seeing everybody fly around and make tackles, play to their fullest ability, you know. So I think it was fun to go out there.
Idaho State had this reputation that they were going to come out and throw it at you guys, but I think your offense did such a good job of, you know, in the second quarter and third quarter in particular, getting the lead, getting the ball. It felt like the offense was on the field for a long time. As a defensive player, what did that feel like for you in the flow of the game?
For me, it felt good because, you know, I had time. We had iPads on the sideline, so it felt good to be able to go back, watch the film, see what I could correct for myself, you know, and as a secondary in the team, you know, moving forward, going back in on defense. So it just allowed us to give us more time, you know, just to stay more prep and, you know, clean up a lot of our assignments and technique.
That's a great point. You know, we haven't talked about this, but one of the rule changes for the listeners is that the teams can have iPads and video on the sideline. How are you guys using that, Jaden? Give us an example of, you know, you get to the sideline and how does that go down?
You know, like for me, like I had a ball called on me. Technically it was a push off, but you know, I'm not going to say anything. So just that, you know, being able to go back on the sidelines, watch it from the iPad, what I could have did better here just to, you know, finish the play. But it's just, yeah, I think it's simple. You know, I think it's really good.
You guys made some big plays on defense and offense as well. But what I saw on the sideline was I saw joy. I saw guys who are happy for their teammates and a lot of celebrating. And I know it's week one, but can you give us an idea? You've been on a lot of teams at different levels. How is this team close? Does this team still need to bond and grow? Give us an idea of kind of where you are as a team.
I think it's all there. You know, I think the big test is going to be going on the road this week, how we handle that, you know, bringing our own energy, how we come out, how we start out the gate. You know, I think that's going to be the biggest thing. But I think, you know, we're all one right now. I think, you know, everybody's making plays. Everybody's happy for each other making plays. You know, nobody's too concerned about, oh, I should be playing this, oh, I should be playing that. You know, I think, you know, everybody on the team is selfless right now. You know, I think everybody's bought into what we got going on this season and what we're trying to accomplish. So, yeah.
Jaden Robinson with us, courtesy of Jamba. He joins us every week. Jaden, now you get the road trip you mentioned. You're going to San Diego State. What do you see on film? Let's talk about their offense.
You know, they're going to run the ball. We got certain keys for a lot of certain plays they do. You know, I think the receivers are going to come out, try to be aggressive. You know, we got some for that. You know, we're going to show up, set the tone. You know, that's how I feel. San Diego State, they're a well-coached football team. Yeah, we're going to go in there and just execute our calls at a higher level than them.
If I'm scouting you guys, and let's flip sides now, and I'm scouting your offense, I am going to load the box. I'm going to say, beat me with Giovanni McCoy throwing the ball. You know, give us an idea of what he's like in practice. You face him. You get to, as a defensive back, face him and face the receivers. Can you guys win a game throwing the ball?
I think we can. You know, smart decisions, smart reads, you know, receivers catching the ball. I think we could beat them in the air if we wanted to. I think we could beat them on the ground if we wanted to. You know, it's just, however they come at us, we're going to adjust and we're going to make it happen. So
I love the running backs. I was watching, you know, kind of the difference between a guy like Jam Griffin and a guy like Hankerson, and just really different kind of styles of running. And there were some guys that got in the game in the second half and late that, you know, nobody's really heard much about. And can you give us a little bit of a scout, like, you know, without giving away state secrets here, but sort of that variety of running backs that are in the room right now at Oregon State? You know, it feels like there's a wide range of talents there.
You know, I think it credits the history of the school. You know, I think a lot of these backs coming up, or who you guys are going to start hearing about here, a lot more of the season, got a lot of talent, I feel like. But that's always how it's been since I've been here. Like, I've been around a lot of talented backs here at Oregon State, so a lot of these young guys coming up, they're good. I think all of them are really talented. I think all of them help us in the best way. I think all of them could play. I like Jam and Hank. But yeah, the young guys are going to be one to reckon with.
Now, I think some Beaver fans saw Damian Martinez leaving and they went, oh, great, this is going to be terrible. But I think if you look at a position group where you could afford to lose a guy that is a 1,000-yard rusher, that would be that would be the group, because I think, you know, what we saw last week and what we may see for the rest of the season are that, you know, the fall off isn't that big when you talk about going from your one to your two at that position.
Mm-hmm. I think
what was that?
I think we got. Oh, go ahead.
No, go ahead. No, you go.
Oh no, I was gonna say I think we got 2,000 yard backs. So, however people want to think about that and adjust to that, they're gonna have to deal with it. I think we got a good back room, and I think some people are gonna have to come and try to stop us. So,
what's it like? What's it like to tackle Jam Griffin in practice?
We actually just had a conversation about this. It's tied right now, in my opinion. It's 1-1. But, you know, we couldn't really go at it like that in scrimmage. So it's really tied. But, you know, we get in the league, we're going to see. It's going to be what it is.
So it's one for you and one for Jam?
Yes, sir.
He doesn't, but like between you and I, with no one else listening, he just doesn't seem like it would be fun, like to tackle him. Like you wouldn't look forward to tackling him, he just looks like, you know, and I saw that with some of the Idaho State players that, you know, you could see how, you know, as a defensive back, you can see a couple guys take a side shot instead of taking him head on. And I thought, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Some people don't want that smoke. Some people don't want that problem. I'm not going to lie. They bowling balls. Hey, they deceptive. They hard to take down. I'm not going to lie.
All right, you guys are on the road Friday. You're going to practice, I guess, in the morning or walk through, whatever you do Friday. Then in the afternoon, you take off. You've traveled before. Some guys in your team are doing it for the first time, or maybe they've traveled with other schools. And, how do you stay in rhythm as a player when you're playing a road game and make it not feel like a road game?
I think just stay in your own cylinder. Like, you know, we're going over here to play this game, you know, just take what you have now with you over there. Like, you know, I don't think don't change anything that you do, you know, do what you do before a game. You're just going to be in a different place. I don't think you got to think about it too much. At the end of the day, it's football. You know, you're going out there to ball. So, you know, you get on the field, you do what you do. At the end of the day, I don't think it's anything to overthink, but you know, some guys get the crowd involved, you know, some things don't go our way, handle a little adversity, you know, it can be nerve wracking at first, but you know, I think it'd be fine at the end of the day.
Have you had your Jamba this week?
I had a Razzmatazz 2 days ago. I definitely did. Daily vitamin.
I think you need to take one on the plane. Like, that would be a good, like, bring it with you on the plane drink.
Oh, definitely, yes. I'm going to have one in hand. Trust.
Jaden, I will see you in San Diego. Good luck this weekend. We'll talk to you next week.
Yes, sir. Thank you guys for having me. Have a good one.
You bet. There he goes, Jaden Robinson. How do you like that, Steven? Some guys don't want that smoke.
Some people don't want the smoke. That was that's what stood out to me, man. That was awesome.
Love that. I don't know. I'm not going to lie. I looked at Jam Griffin on Saturday when he was running, and I was like, that wouldn't be fun to try to, you know. And I'm not talking about he's going to lose you in the open field. There's just a moment of truth when a running back is in space and you've got a defensive back who is looking at him, and you go, you realize, does the DB want to tackle him, or is he looking for a side shot? You know, how, and even guys in the NFL will tell you, especially guys in the NFL will tell you, hey, I'm thinking about my career. Like, I'm not trying to tackle, running back coming out of the backfield straight on if you're a cover corner. So, Jam Griffin makes that problem happen. Oregon State at San Diego State. We'll talk about that game. Plus the Ducks against Boise State. Will they bounce back? How angry will Oregon play? Plus, Steven and I will handicap Colorado, Nebraska, and others. Leave it here. 19.
You've got the home of the truth. Back to the Bald-Faced Truth with John Canzano on 750 The Game.
Show is fast moving. Idaho coach Jason Eck was with us in hour one. Jaden Robinson, defensive back, Oregon State, with us in hour two. Tomorrow's show will be jam-packed, all about college football and a little about the NFL, as the Chiefs and the Ravens will be playing here coming up in about a half an hour. You'll hear the game right here on 750 The Game. and other affiliates as well. Steven and I are going to kick around the games of the weekend. My full picks, full disclosure, if you want them all, you can read them at johnconzano.com. It's up right now. The post is out there right now. If you're a subscriber, you already got it. But my week two picks, thoughts, and predictions are out. I did well last week. I don't want to say what record I had against the spread, 12-3, or straight up 15-0. But I did well, and I'm hoping to do well again this week. If I don't do well, I will own it, okay?
You sound like Coach Prime over here. You're hyping yourself up. He's hyping his players up. You know?
Why can't I get a vote for the Heisman? The truth is, I'm well aware that it may have been an anomaly, and I may come crashing back down to earth. Much in the same way when I was in college and I found myself in front of a roulette table, I just had a nice little run at the blackjack table, Steven. You know what I'm talking about. You had a nice little run. You're walking. You're cashed out. You got your chips in your hand. You're headed to the cage. And what do you hear? You hear the spinning of that roulette wheel. And I walked over to the table. I think I had about $600 that I had won at blackjack. And for me, that was like $1 million in college. And so I walked by the blackjack table and I thought, what the heck? Throw 100 on black. I'm already up. Came up red, Steven.
Mm.
Subsequently, I threw another 100 on black, thinking, could it do it twice? And I'm here to tell you, Steven, that I gave back all $600 in six spins and learned a life lesson that, you know, nothing's for sure. And there's a reason why all of the lights and the chandeliers in that casino shine brightly.
It's people like you and me that have given to the casinos. Why they're so
people
nice.
At the table were so nice. They were rooting for me, and they were because they're looking at you. You're like a 23-year-old kid, 22-year-old kid, and they're looking at you. Go and they're going, oh!
And it's just so awkward because they don't know what to say. They're like, oh, sorry. Oh, that's
you
tough.
Could just tell that they wanted me to win, and it got to the point where like I was just like, well, I already gave away 300 of it.
Might as well keep going.
Oh, it's a life lesson. I've learned it well. All right, let's start with the morning game on Saturday, 9 a.m. Saturday on Fox. We're just going to hit four games here. I have the full slate of games on the website at johnconzano.com. But Texas is at Michigan, Saturday, 9 a.m. on Fox. Texas is a 7.5-point favorite. That's been fluctuating a little bit, 7.5. Last I saw it was 7.5. I didn't like Michigan's win over Fresno State. I didn't think it was convincing, even though the score was 30-10. Statistically, they had 18 first downs. They gave up 18 first downs. They only outgained Fresno State by 25 yards. Bulldogs were in the red zone with under 6 minutes to play, down by 13. They threw a pick six. It kind of skewed the score a little bit. I just don't think Michigan's that good. I still think they're in this rebuild, change of transition, coming off a national title. Michigan's really, you know, up against a Texas team that's really good. I like Texas. I like Texas to cover the 7.5. I have it 35-20, Texas.
I agree with you because initially I wanted to pick Michigan. I thought Michigan would have a chance and stay close in this game, but you go back and you even dig into that box score a little bit. Davis Warren was the starting quarterback. He's not like super talented. He completed, only six passes to wide receivers. And it only totaled a like 34 yards, something like that, like at last game against Fresno State. So what are they going to do against Texas? Like you have to have some type of weapon on the outside. Michigan doesn't really have those receivers anymore. They've lost a lot of players. I don't know. I'm with you. I think Texas goes in and dominates. And I think a reason why also is because of what Sark said earlier during Punch It, how you played that. And it was they went to Alabama last year and they won. Like I wasn't expecting them to do that last season. And they went in and they dominated an Alabama team. At Michigan's a tough place to play. I think you have the experience. Quinn Ewers is back. I'm with you. I think Texas goes in, dominates, calculates the points.
Colorado's at Nebraska, 4:30 Saturday on NBC. Colorado got outrushed in week one by North Dakota State. Not surprising, but they got outrushed 157-59. That caught my eye. I think Colorado's got some of the same problems they had last season where their rush defense isn't great and their rushing attack isn't good enough. This is a revenge game for Nebraska. They got laughed at and mocked and were part of the narrative early last season that Colorado was great. I think Colorado gives up a bunch of rushing yards to Nebraska. I think they move the ball on the ground. I think that takes some pressure off their pass game. I think Colorado's passing offense will keep it in the game. Nebraska's favored by 7. I like Nebraska to win it. I do worry about a late Colorado score and maybe a backdoor cover, because I'm picking it Nebraska 34, Colorado 24. But damn, Steven, I'm afraid it's going to be 34-31 with like a late score, and I'm going to miss on this one. But I have to take Nebraska at home. I say they cover the 7, but I don't love the pick.
Yeah, I'm against you on this one. It's too many points for me. I'm going to take Colorado plus the points. I don't think Colorado wins. I think Nebraska wins, but I think you're right. It could be a backdoor cover situation. I just feel like we're anointing Dylan Raiola a little too early. He's played one collegiate game. It was against UTEP. He looked great. There's no doubt about it. But it was against UTEP, and even though Colorado's defense isn't great, it's going to be better than what UTEP was throwing out there. We'll find out, you're right, about the defensive line in Colorado. They looked good against North Dakota State, and they're going to have to be good again here in week two against Nebraska, but I think that they are. I think that they're a little bit better than they were a season ago, so I'm going to take Colorado plus the points. I think Nebraska still wins, but I think Shador is going to have a nice game. That offense is going to be able to throw the football on Nebraska. I think we're just anointing Dylan Raiola just a little too early right now to say you're an 8-point favorite or 7.5-point favorite over a Colorado team. Give me Colorado plus the points.
There were a number of games last year where Shador and Colorado, even though they lost the game, drove down and got some late scores and kept it closer than it should have been. And I kind of think, like, my gut's telling me I should take Colorado in the 7, but I think Nebraska's about 10 points better. So I'm going to take Nebraska, and we'll see how that unfolds. Boise State is at Oregon, 7 o'clock Saturday on Peacock. Broncos are 3-0 against the Ducks all time. This is a bounce-back opportunity for Dan Lanning's team. Ducks coming off that win over Idaho that nobody liked for some reason. Spencer Danielson on the Boise side, nobody's talking about him. I think he's a factor in this game. He's only coached 5 games in his career. I love the way that they ran the ball.
Now, it's time for What's on Tap.
I love the way, that was scary. That,
my fat fingers and hands just hit the mouse.
I love the way that Boise ran the ball last week. They had a great running performance. But I think Oregon's defense is up to the task on this. I think they will answer the bell. Oregon is favored by 19.5. That is a big number. But I think they cover it. I think it's Oregon 42, Boise State 21.
I really hope you're having a down week this week, because I'm going to take Boise State plus the points. There was nothing in that week one game against Idaho that I saw.
I know.
That was great. And I need to see it first with this team, with that offensive line. The offensive line was really bad in week one. And I know Lanning's gotten after them. He's gotten after the whole team. You just know he has. Like, Dan Lanning has that personality where he is going to get after these guys. And it was a good week of practice. But Ashton Jeanty is the real deal for the running back for Boise State, 260-plus yards, 6 touchdowns against Georgia Southern. Boise State knows their identity. They're a tough-nosed team, and they're playing with a chip on their shoulder. They've never lost to Oregon. They've talked about it, and this is a big-time game for Boise State. They feel like they should be on the same level in the Power 4 conferences, and I think they may be the Group of 5 representative in the College Football Playoff. So I think this is a really big game for Boise State. I think they keep it close enough. Lose by 10-14. I think Oregon wins, but I'm going to take Boise State plus the points, John. I just cannot take Oregon right now. I just can't take it right now.
It's a lot of points. It's a lot of points. Your logic makes sense. I kind of think Oregon's going to take the running game out and lead early and look impressive, but we shall see. I have Oregon winning by 3 touchdowns. Is that enough? Oregon State at San Diego State, 7:30 on Saturday night on CBS Sports Network. I love the way the Beavers ran the ball in week one. They played good defense. Oregon State needs this game. It's a huge game. And when I looked at the matchup early in the week, Oregon State was a 4-point favorite. They're now 5.5-point favorites. People are betting on Oregon State. I didn't like that the number is moving higher, but I think Oregon State can win this by a touchdown or more. I have it 28-21, Oregon State, kind of a game played in the 20s, Trent Bray style. Good defensive effort, run the football. But I'll take Oregon State, and I have them covering the 5.5.
Man, I flipped and flopped in this game all week long. San Diego State starts a true freshman quarterback, Dane O'Neill. Now, he had a nice game against Texas A&M Commerce. It is what it is. I think I'm with you in that it's going to be a lower-scoring game. San Diego State wants to run the football. Sean Lewis, they want to run the ball. We know Trent Bray wants to run the football for the Oregon State Beavers on the offensive side. So I think it's going to be a lower-scoring game. And if I can get a 6, I would love it. with San Diego State because of the lower scoring game. 5.5, I'd probably take the Beavs. But if it's at 6, I'd probably take San Diego State, which is the low scoring. So if we're going 5.5, I'm with you. I'm going Oregon State in this one. I think they're just going to be too strong up front. And I also think that defense, you know, led by Jaden Robinson, who we just had on the show, they're going to confuse a true freshman quarterback. Like Oregon State and Trent Bray, Keith Hayward, they're going to have some designs for that quarterback to you know, really confuse him. And I think that maybe a big mistake could happen in the fourth quarter. So I'll take Oregon State minus 5.5.
Oh, we agree on that one. All right, which of the four games we talked about do you feel the strongest about with your pick?
I feel good about the Boise State game. I feel good about Boise State, Oregon. I just, the first game at Oregon really shocked me at how lethargic it was and how much, how the physicality. That's what got me the most, John.
But aren't you expecting that Oregon will like snap to it and go, hey, man, maybe they were a little vanilla
can you just
in their
turn,
game
play? But can you just switch that, flip that switch on? It was physicality for me. It was up front. Idaho pushed them around. It was 4th and inches. And Idaho stopped him.
Like, but doesn't Georgia Southern getting like 45 on Boise do anything for you?
It does, but I don't know. I feel good about 19.5 points.
Oregon might score 70. I don't know.
Well, Ash and Jenty might run for another six studies. You know,
I never know. The game I feel strongest about is Texas at Michigan. I don't see a way that Texas. I think Texas is a real threat to blow Michigan out. But I have them winning by 15. They'll cover the 7.5. That's the game I felt the strongest about. Texas over Michigan. All right, Anna's coming along for the 5 at 5. We will be going to the NFL game, Chiefs-Ravens, coming up at about 5:15 right here on 750 The Game and some of the other networks. Just as a warning as you're listening, for those of you who missed the hour one, Jason Eck, the Idaho coach, was with us. He was fantastic, kind of handicapping and talking about what they tried to do against Oregon last week in the opener, what worked well, what they were surprised by, what they weren't surprised by. Jaden Robinson was very comfortable and candid in his interview earlier this hour. Grab those podcasts and leave it here.
BFFT. From the PacWest Center in downtown Portland, presented by High Caliber Millwrights, here's John Canzano with a bald-faced truth.
Man, is it hot out there? Although I'm in here, it's easy for me to say. Anna, you've been out there. What is it? Is it like the face of the sun? What is it? What's it like out there?
It's just kind of that, like, hazy. I mean, some of it's the smog from the wildfire smoke.
Oh.
It's not a comfortable heat. Let's just put it that way.
When I walk outside, do I feel like I'm getting in the oven at about 325?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I feel for anybody that's working in this right now. That's
hydrate, take care of yourself. Your job doesn't love you. I'll say that. If you own a company, don't take personal offense to that. I know it's not the same. Just take care of yourself if you're outside. And also, a lot of sporting events getting canceled. Youth sports practices getting canceled, other things getting canceled. I think Steven, did your kids, did they cancel school?
They canceled school. Just got an email, excessive heat closure for tomorrow for the kids.
So they're closing the school.
Too hot.
Are we going to get called wimpy by other states? Like, people in Texas going to be like, look at you guys shutting your school down.
100%.
That's go
the same way
go
the same way that people from the Midwest make fun of us when there's a dusting of snow and we close the school.
Well, they don't know about the hills. There's hills here. They don't know about the ice.
You don't know about the hills and the heat. You know, when they get combined, I guess it gets extra hot, maybe?
You combine that heat.
With those hills.
And those hills. Look out. Put some salt down. Make sure you hydrate. And if you're having an issue with your heating cooling system, you know where I go, firstcallheat.com. Shout out to Brad and Mason and the team at First Call Heating and Cooling. They'll have your back if you're having an issue. That's why you service your system in the spring and in the fall. If you're not having any problems, just call them and say, I'd like to get on the maintenance schedule, because that day will come. Anna, you're heavy breathing right now.
Oh,
are you okay?
No, I...
Are you okay?
Maybe.
Did you hear her, Steven?
I didn't know.
In my ear.
Concussion back?
I felt like I was taking a phone call from a weirdo.
I'm sorry. I don't know why.
You closed your mouth. You went nasal. And you were just heavy breathing. Wow. I was like, what is that sound? It sounds like the ocean. And I was like, what's going on? Looking around.
It's my wife. I don't know.
Okay.
Maybe it's because I've been outside.
Yeah.
You know?
You're thinking about the heat right now.
She hasn't hydrated yet. She's not hydrated.
My asthma is worked up.
Okay. Here we go. We have the five at five.
The five at five. Number one.
Trying to get through this without sounding like I have COPD. Caleb Williams. You know, he hasn't really made his mark in the NFL just yet, but his college legacy is cemented forever. USC announced he's getting his number 13 jersey retired. He had John Legend, Snoop Dogg, Lincoln Riley all chiming in the tribute video. And, you know, it's tradition for Southern California to retire the numbers for all Heisman winners. Speaking of, Reggie Bush, who recently had his Heisman Trophy win reinstated, is getting his number 5 jersey enshrined as well.
I think it's cool that they're doing this. I also just kind of wonder about retiring jerseys in general. You know, Steven and I were talking about this a week or two ago. You start retiring numbers and, you know, do we know college football is going to go on for a couple hundred more years? If so, are they sure they can retire 13? Like, can they afford to start retiring a bunch of numbers? It's also an homage to Reggie Bush, who for a while was treated like a pariah at USC, given that, you know, they were doing NIL before everybody else with Reggie. He got his Heisman sort of settled. Now he's getting his jersey retired. He's going to lead the team on the field, he said, at some point this season. So he's back in the fold at USC.
Number two.
I'm scared to breathe now. I'm over here just holding
my
breath.
Hold your breath.
Pass out for a different reason. Did you hear about what happened to the Commander's executive, the vice president of content, Rael Entine, fired after a video surfaced in which he made disparaging remarks about players, fans, Roger Goodell, and Jerry Jones? He called Roger Goodell a $50 million puppet. He called the Commander's fan base and football fans in general high school educated alcoholics and mouth breathers. Oh, maybe he's referring to me. That hits too close to home. But here's what's crazy about it. He was initially suspended when this video started making the rounds. The comments were made during a conversation with an undercover reporter who he met on a dating app who secretly videotaped their encounter. So he thinks he's on a date?
Oh, no.
Spouting off about all these things? Turns out that person was just capturing the video to share to the world.
But why is he sharing all of this inside info
on a first date?
The NFL. Like, that's his flex, you know? Like,
yeah.
Let me talk about me on a first date. Everybody likes to talk about themselves. Okay, that's given.
Yes.
But he's saying, basically telling this person that, you know, I know all this dirt about the NFL and how it works because of the job I'm in. That's his thing?
Mm-hmm. So he's gone.
Apparently
he's
didn't work for him in a number of ways.
Number three.
Oh, what to do next? Okay, let's talk about Alex Morgan, the face of American soccer for a generation. She announced that she will retire. This Sunday will mark her final appearance as a professional soccer player. She's 35 years old. Her team, the San Diego Wave, will be hosting the North Carolina Courage. She also, by the way, announced that she's pregnant with her second child. But she says, you know, soccer's been part of her for 30 years. One of the first things that she loved, and she's ready to hang up her hat.
You know what? I don't know if it's a hat that should be hung up. It should be like a cleats or a jersey. But I also, you know, we had her in studio once upon a time when she was with the Thorns.
Yeah, she spent 3 years with the Thorns.
She was delightful. And she had written a children's book.
That's right.
I think she's got more to offer the world than soccer. I'm interested to see what she does next.
Number four.
This is a weird one. The Cincinnati Bengals are banning reporters from filming their players crossing the street to the practice facility. It's really weird. So a reporter with The Athletic posted a video of one of their wide receivers, Ja'Marr Chase, walking to practice. And I think he kind of posted it because, like, that apparently the Bengals are banning reporters from taking photos and videos of the players as they cross the street. They have to cross a city street, which is, this is bogus. They can't ban reporters from taking photos on a public sidewalk.
They can't, but they can strongly discourage it, or they can threaten them. I had the NBA says, you know, you can't take photos of a player in the locker room. No still shots.
Okay.
You can do video.
Yeah.
But no still shots in the locker room for some reason. But that's the locker room.
Yeah.
That's your space. If they said you can't take a picture of the player, like, at the shopping mall down the street, you'd be like, what are you talking about? It's not your shopping mall.
Well, and especially on a public street.
Yeah.
It's just dumb.
What do you think happens there?
I think that's... They've got to back down on that. That's...
How would you handle that? You've worked a long time as a media member. Do you have that debate
up front?
Well, first,
you try to not be adversarial. You try to have a conversation and say, this is unreasonable. And by the way, you can't do that. It's illegal.
What do you think caused this? Something caused this.
It's a really busy street. And so the way the structure of the practice facility is, these players have to park and then cross this busy street to get to the practice facility.
So they're worried about
the
player.
And it looks bad.
Yeah.
No. They're worried about how it looks. Like, it looks kind of cheesy that their players are having to, like, you know, wait for a crosswalk. They're concerned about the image, I think, that it projects.
Well,
I don't think they're not saying anything about the safety.
Build
of the
a tunnel. Build a tunnel. Build a walkway.
Right.
And fix the issue. You know, I think I would be just more inclined to keep taking the pictures and the videos and dare them to do something about it.
But then, you know how that is. Yeah. If you're the reporter covering that team, then you're facing, you know, are they going to give you a hard time?
Nah,
because
I don't worry about that.
You know.
University of Oregon used
access.
To allow all media members on the field before games.
Uh-huh.
I went down on the field and I interviewed a recruit named Ray Casongo, who ended up playing college basketball. Oregon then subsequently banned all reporters from being on the field.
Oh, way to go.
But they were just looking for an excuse to do it.
Well.
Number five.
You were the excuse. Okay, let's finish with a soccer player for the Washington Spirit, Croy Bethune. She will not play again this season because she hurled out a ceremonial pitch to the Nationals game last week and wound up tearing her knee. Tweaked her knee.
Ow!
Season-ending torn meniscus, and that's it. That's what can happen in the ceremonial first
pitch. Don't do it, people. Here to tell you. Walk away. You don't want to hobble away. By the way, a friend of mine in Phoenix just texted me a photograph. He must be streaming the show. Of their weather report for the week in Phoenix. And 111 today, 113, 108, 106, 105, and their kids are going to school.
It's a dry heat.